David Edgar.
I'm very pleased to follow and echo Abdul Rahman. As he said, 50 years ago, a mighty clash of civilizations was raging, not just in Egypt or in Hungary, but in the struggle for black civil rights in the southern United States. On one side of this struggle was a white conservative establishment which was maintaining segregation nearly 100 years after the Civil War. On the other side was a superficially rather unlikely coalition. Of course, the majority of people who fought against segregation were its victims. But from the late 50s on, they were joined by young white people from the North. The black campaigners were de facto poor, self-educated, and steeped in the language and beliefs of the Bible. The young people who came to work, live, fight, and in some cases die alongside them were largely students, often Jewish, and in many cases brought up in left-wing secular families. I think the alliance that desegregated the southern states is one of the great popular movements of the 20th century. It was a similar alliance that supported and fought with the Popular Front in Spain and overthrew apartheid in South Africa. It brought about the American New Deal and the British welfare state. In a smaller way, it was the alliance that defeated the National Front here in Britain in the late 1970s. What happened to that alliance in America is instructive. In the late 60s, for absolutely understandable and probably unavoidable reasons, its black leaders decided to counter the inevitable tendency of articulate young white students to dominate organizations by insisting on an all-black leadership. At the same time, Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm X, and others were leading a movement of cultural as well as political emancipation through the black Muslims. Later, the slogan Black Power led to the Black Panthers. These movements led to and did many great goods, but they had consequences. The breakup of the civil rights coalition set back, in my view, the building of a political alliance between the progressive intelligentsia and the victims of racial and economic oppression in the United States, with the result that the only way the Democrats can win power and influence is by moving into Republican territory, which is exactly, of course, what they did last week. And I think you can recognize some of those tendencies today, which is why I'm here. There's another reason. I'm not a believer. I don't think there's a supernatural or an afterlife. I certainly wouldn't be speaking at a conference against Christianophobia or Buddhaphobia. I'm a fervent defender of various principles which increasingly run counter to equally fervently held religious beliefs. To be honest, I think the politicization of religion is a regrettable and increasingly dangerous phenomenon. I wish in particular that people of Pakistani and Bangladeshi origin in Britain still pursued their considerable and justified grievances through the political and industrial channels and with the secular language in which they pursued them in the 70s, even though I understand completely why they don't. But the reason why I feel it's important to speak against Islamophobia is because Christians aren't going to earn £300,000 less in their lifetime than equally qualified non-Christians, but Pakistanis still are. A statistic I mentioned because it's in Trevor Phillips' Sleepwalking into Segregation speech. Because Christians still aren't stuck in substandard housing because of pretty recent discrimination in both the private and public housing markets, in areas of increasing Christian concentration because of non-Christian flight. Because there isn't a political party with 52 councillors which thinks that Christianity is a vile and wicked religion and whose main policy remains deporting its adherents. In other words, as speaker after speaker said today, because there is still racism. And while I don't think religious discrimination and racial discrimination are the same thing, clearly racial hatred is now being expressed in the vocabulary of religious hatred and not just by Nick Griffin. But I'm also here because the demonization of Islam in particular is creating dangerous cracks in the progressive coalition in this country. In particular, the issue of multiculturalism is digging a new fault line between supporters of the left liberal social agenda, free speech, women's and gay rights, and so on, and Muslims. The digger of this new fault line include feminist writers who proclaim that multiculturalism is the enemy of women's rights, and progressive political commentators whose writings about almost everything else I happen to agree with. How to stop this happening? First of all, those of us who support progressive values have to admit that they have not and are not as universal in Western societies as we'd like them to be. Enlightenment, enlightenment, enlightenment is not good enough. Historically, the search for the essence of Britishness in Enlightenment values has led to significant airbrushing of the last 300 years, which I'm also not the first person to point out. Sometimes it seems that Britain invented slavery only so it could abolish it. Listen to Gordon Brown speaking about our historic liberties, and you might think they run in the proverbial golden thread, unbroken and unkinked, right back to the Glorious Revolution, that free speech, gender equality, and gay liberation were clauses 1 to 3 of the 1688 Bill of Rights. Lest we forget, homosexuality in this country was only decriminalised in 1967. Sexual freedom and freedom of speech are recent, hard-fought, still controversial, and insecure victories. Further, there is the myth that these freedoms are only challenged from one religious quarter. Criminalisation of homosexuality, banning books from classrooms, and indeed the prohibition of what the state of Virginia regards as indecent dress are, of course, a major part of the American Christian fundamentalist agenda. Thirdly, there is an increasing trend for what is liberal in theory to become distinctly illiberal in practice. I wrote in defence of the right of women to wear the veil, not because I do or don't think it's a good idea, but because 24 hours after Jack Straw made his statement, 97% of the Daily Express's readership called for wearing it not to be challenged or argued against, but banned, as the burqa has been banned in several Belgian municipalities, a policy which, as we heard this morning, the Dutch Parliament has followed for the whole of Holland. Throughout Europe, new immigrants are set tests on the history and culture of the countries they want to live in, which are too difficult for their own parliamentarians to answer. In its test, the German state of Hesse asked prospective immigrants if they can name the motif of the German painter Caspar David Friedrich's most famous painting. Any takers? Well, you can't live in Germany then. Another German state asked prospective settlers from Islamic countries only for their opinions on a wide variety of social questions. As it happens, I agree with the state of Baden-Württemberg that homosexuality should be accepted and that wives shouldn't have to obey their husbands. But I'll bet not every resident of Baden-Württemberg agrees with either of those propositions. And I also believe that people have the right to their opinions, even if I disagree with them, in the same way as I think they should be allowed to wear what they want to. I definitely think people should be enabled and actually encouraged to learn the predominant language of the country they live in. But I don't think other languages should be banned from school playgrounds or the street, as they increasingly are in continental Europe. Unless we think this is all the work of authoritarian Central Europeans, the Germans really can't claim they've been devoted to liberal principles for the whole of the last 300 years. We should note how such ideas are seeping into the culture here. It's not just Daily Express readers who have such trouble with Salma Yacoub's point that you can defend the right not to wear the niqab in countries where it's compulsory as fervently as you defend the right to wear it here. David Goodhart is the editor of the left-leaning journal Prospect. In his latest pamphlet, published by Demos, titled Progressive Nationalism, Goodhart proposes a two-tier welfare system, the teaching of imperial history in schools, the creation of a migration and integration ministry, the raising of citizenship test hurdles, the reassertion of the monarchy and the army as nationally binding institutions, this is left-leaning, the banning of certain forms of dress from public buildings, guess which, and the reintroduction of conscription. So what is to be done? I think we need to take two lessons from the civil rights movement. One is the value of people from very different and perhaps sometimes seemingly incompatible cultures, listening and learning from each other. The other is indeed the civil rights agenda. As Gandhi said about Western civilization, enlightenment values would be a very good idea. we need to call them to account. First of all, to point out the hypocrisy of people who support freedom of speech and opinion when it suits them and don't when it doesn't. Second, to defend those civil liberties which are one of the Enlightenment's undoubted, most enduring and valuable legacies. Third, of course, to support Muslim women fighting to admit women to mosques in Blackburn, but also to support women fighting to desegregate the upper reaches of our great national institutions, including the Church of England. Fourth, to take the free expression ideals of the liberal state seriously by levelling the playing field. Repeal the blasphemy laws, which defend only one religion from attack. I'm frankly less interested in beefing up the unworkable religious hatred bill, even less interested in John Reid beefing it up, which is what would happen, than in repealing the glorification clause of the new terrorism bill, which is unnecessary in that the bill outlaws incitement already, coercive in that it criminalises the expression of opinions, and discriminatory in that it's clearly not designed to get defenders of the ANC, the Stern Gang, the IRA, or the organisers of the Boston Tea Party. Oh, and I'd disestablish the Church of England. And finally, to assert that while liberté is a necessary condition of social well-being and justice, it's not a sufficient condition. Indeed, the absence of égalité and fraternité, there are circumstances in which liberté can be a tool of rejection and exploitation. In summary, to initiate a grown-up debate, not about how newcomers might assimilate themselves into a fixed and unchanging Britain, but how a mature, multicultural, modern democracy, a renewed public square, might grow and develop and deepen in the future.
Thanks very much, David. Thank you.